You are listening to 89.5 KPOO San Francisco, and welcome to Reality Sandwich, where every Thursday at noon, we serve up a palatable taste of the truth on topics of the mind, body, spirit, community, economy, all six areas of the Healthful Living model, and you can read more about that at healthfulliving.org. My name is Martin Matthews. I'm a certified medical and clinical hypnotherapist, and most importantly for me, an Healthful Living advocate with Healthful Living. And you can get this show and future shows of Reality Sandwich at realitysandwichradio.com. Today, I'm very delighted to welcome back to the show a guest we had on last year. One of my, I think, most personally valuable and worthwhile conversations with Louis Dor Dempree, who I'm going to welcome to the show in just a moment. Louis is a spiritual master, and he's coming to the world to help others restore their inherent divinity and live as unconditional love. And using contemporary and practical tools, as well as examples from his own journey to God realization, Louis teaches how to attain self-mastery and lasting inner peace and joy. His non-denominational timeless expressions of divine truth guide people from all spiritual and religious paths, as well as all social, economic, and cultural backgrounds, to create peace, unity, tolerance, compassion, humility, and love, all the peoples of the world. I want to welcome to the show right away and hope he's on the line, Louis Dor Dempree. Louis, are you with us?
Yes, Martin, thank you, and it's great to be here. It's great to be back. I can't believe it's almost a year. Wow. Tempus fugus.
Yes, and so much has transpired, and just such a an apropos time for us to connect and explore love, openness, spiritual growth, your phenomenal work in the world. You know, since we're just reconnecting, if you would please just briefly give listeners kind of a quick memory of your work and your path and what you're bringing forward and with your work in the Louis Dor Dempree Foundation down in San Diego.
Well, we try to reach as many people as we can and share the words and wonders of love of God and help connect people to God's will as they see it and know it and feel it in their hearts. And what I strive to the best of my ability to do is to teach people how to connect to the divine, how to hear that divine voice within, and then learn how to become obedient to it, subservient and obedient to that all-pervading, ever-radiating voice from within that not only created the cosmos but guides it. And the more people do that, surrender to, listen to, attune to it, surrender to it, obey it, serve it, the more peace they have, the better their life flows, the happier they become, and the more successful and healthy they become in all areas of their lives.
Yes,
socially,
yes.
Morally, emotionally, financially, physically, you know, in every conceivable realm. And that's what it's really all about. And we do that through many, many different ways, you know, through talks and seminars and workshops, retreats, pilgrimages, Q&As, evenings, meditations, pranayama, and guiding people how to become pure love, basically, how to purify all levels of their being, thoughts, words, feelings, and deeds, so that they can walk in the world as pure love, as many have modeled in the past, Jesus, Buddha, Krishna, Muhammad, and many, many others by many other names. We are all of that same essence, and so our journey is all to restore ourselves to that. You know, many people think, you know, in their own religions and walks and beliefs that was relegated to the fair few who modeled it, but they perfected themselves and then modeled it so to show others that this is you too. You know, Jesus himself said, "Greater works than these shall all ye do," and that's what he meant. Everything you see in me is in you, and if you follow my example and my teachings, then you can become that. We're all meant to live like that. Gods and goddesses on this paradisian playground. That's really, I mean, we've got the most beautiful planet in the whole cosmos. And no, it doesn't look that way to many, but that's another subject. But it really is. It really is heaven on earth. Heaven is earth.
It's interesting to hear you speak, and I'm thinking now, there seems to be a global epidemic regarding love. Perhaps. I mean, the key essence here is that it is within. And in today's world, we are hearing so many messages coming from outside of us telling us, you know, what we need to do and how we need to be, that we're thrust into fear about really everything, and especially even our own selves, hence that we become in that moment fully disconnected from the self, from love.
Right. That's true. And then people get distorted concepts of what that love is supposed to look like, and that my journey needs to look like your journey, and it's just, and, you know, there's so many distortions and delusions out there that makes it very scary for people. And then, of course, there's, when you started that intro there, I just now, I thought you were going to, when you said about love, I thought you were talking about how many people are out chasing it, like in hot pursuit of it, and not realizing that it is within. That no job, no amount of money, no great sex, lover, drug, you know, person can ever bring someone that love, or make them get it, or attain it, or fulfill them. You'll never find it outside of self. And many people spend their whole lives trying, and other people delude themselves into thinking they have found it, but deep inside is that deep hollow ache, because while they might have hoodwinked everyone outside, when in the still of the night, when no one's around and no one's looking, there's still that ache. What is missing? What is missing? And that piece that's missing is that connection to source, to the divine, to God. You know, and people can patronize themselves and placate themselves all their lives, but it all comes back to that. You know, we are inextricably linked to our Creator by whatever name, a rose by any other name is a rose, and that's what pumps our heart, inflates our lungs, makes the sun go up and down, and to live in exile from that, or pretending that it's not there or not real or we don't need it, is just, I don't know which is worse, the ignorance or the arrogance.
What do you sense is going on today? I mean, in our world, where so many, it seems, both are relearning this information, and so many are completely, you know, forgetting it and getting much more, you know, disconnected. It seems like these two things are going on. Are you observing something similar?
Could you repeat that last part again about the two things going on?
Well, that some people, to use a collective term, are waking up, right? Remembering something about themselves and the world and how things are meant to feel to them, and others are getting caught in this, you know, vortex of disconnectedness, right? This being driven by things outside of them. I have to achieve this. I have to do this. I have to be good enough. And hence being more disconnected from themselves.
Oh, exactly. No, I agree with that 100%. And in fact, the way I describe it in my teachings is that, there's a common agreement in the world, and particularly like in the New Age movement, there's a common agreement that everything is all coming together into love, you know, that everything is just moving into the fifth dimension, everything is all hearts and flowers. The truth is the exact opposite. The polarity in the world is getting wider and wider and wider. So the whole middle zone, what I call the free will zone, is falling out.
Mm-hmm.
I can't decide, and I don't know, or I'll just sit here and I won't do anything. And,
right.
You know, that coasting along zone is falling out. It's like God, you know, rented a crack in the earth, you know, and people standing at what was just a hairline crack is now 2-3 feet wide, and if someone's straddling both sides of it, you got to pick a side. You know, you got to step on this side, that side, or you fall in the middle.
Yeah, the illusions.
Leave your embodiment, you know.
The illusions that held up the fence in the middle are gone.
Yeah, they are. And so what happens is exactly the way you described it, the way I would describe what you said energetically, is that people are going stronger into what you call the awakening, which I would call faith, and other people going deeper into fear. And so, and that out pictures as greater awakenings and epiphanies and mystical revelation and people having complete catharses in their lives, where, you know, their relationships fall away and their careers suddenly change, and all of a sudden, you know, supernatural powers awaken in them, or they have a complete change into another talent. And then for other people, the fear, increasing fear, manifests as, if you look in the world, you know, hedonism is at an all-time high, and prostitution and drug abuse and murder and crime and divorce and everything is at its all-time high, because people are scrambling and racing and still trying to find something to hold it all together and patch it up, or to avoid feeling the pain that is inside of each one of us, you know, to some degree, larger or smaller. And so, yeah, absolutely, both are increasing at exponential rates with no stopping in sight, and the crack getting wider and wider, so, which is a good thing. But if you think of that, many people say, well, that sounds horrifying. But no, if you think of that as a microcosm of global or collective consciousness, and see that metaphorically as a rubber band, if you stretch the rubber band wider and wider and wider, what eventually happens? It pops. It snaps.
Mm-hmm.
And when it snaps, what's left there is just the oneness. And the reason it has to go that way, because people, when I describe that, people say, oh, that sounds so cruel, that sounds so heartless, why does it have to be that way? And God didn't create that system, humans did. Because most people relate to God through fear rather than faith, they experience God through fear-based realities rather than faith-based ones or love-based ones. So basically, God uses whatever we bring to the table. However you come to the altar is how you're received, and God uses what you bring. That's like the ultimate act of unconditional love. God lets each of us love God and love ourselves and treat the world exactly how we want, because the outcome is the same for everyone. All roads all lead to the same place, the return to love.
Mm.
We're a species that is awake. The whole species is awakening to its primordial essence as pure love. For some it's painful, for some it's pleasurable, for some it's a mix.
Well, and many, many will argue about it, too, and say, no, that's not true.
And they're welcome to, if that makes them feel better. You know, the truth is not affected by anyone's opinions. So.
Yes, thank you for saying that. Let's repeat that again. The truth is not affected by anyone's opinions. Opinions. And especially when they're just not equally tuning into a co-creation of the now with you. A lot of people being stuck in the past, or you know, in some other time, and not having been really privy or present throughout perhaps you know long periods of time. I think now it's interesting because I'm in my early 40s and I have a you know very conscious perception of the last 25, 30 years, and there seem to be many who you know were stuck in a pattern of following the outside world, doing what they're told, you know, and not being very quote grounded or boy, I hate to use a collective term, awake, but that's, you know, for lack of anything else, let's just use that term. And now many people are arriving here, and today is very, very complex, very busy, very fascinating world, and they're not necessarily equipped to be dealing with everything. So they're hoping that, you know, using the old methods will work today, but they don't. So they stick more dogmatically to old methods. And there just seems to be this large clash going on between people that get it and people that are kind of stuck.
Yeah, for sure. And that's one of the things that's creating a lot of pain and suffering for people. People are discovering now, as love is reclaiming dominion of the planet and the light quotient is rising greater and greater and higher, people are scrambling to use those tried and true methods that, I'll put loose quotes around it, that they believe have made their lives work. In other words, control or manage.
Right.
And now they're not working anymore, and that's driving people into a frenzy of fear, of panic, of anger, resentment, retaliation, and that people don't—they just don't know, and they don't even. Some people don't even know that they don't know.
Right.
But they're saying, "Oh my God, I've been able to stay in control and manage my life, and now nothing's working." One of the things I'm seeing more and more is people—the foundation beneath people's lives—is crumbling, just literally liquefying or turning to sand,
mm-hmm.
and it's just happening. You know, in fact, I live down in Laguna Beach, California, and I don't know if you remember in the news about 2 or 3 years ago, it might be longer now, I don't have a good record of time, but we had a mountain liquefy in Laguna, and it just happened just in a split second, and this whole mountain just liquefied. It was different than a landslide where
mm-hmm.
soil runs down the surface. This just, half the mountain just liquefied, and just the homes just fell, and just all crumbled. It was the weirdest thing.
Hmm.
And I'm using that as a metaphor. That's what's happening in people's lives, that in an instant, everything's gone. And they don't know where they are, what they're doing, and, you know, and people are trying to make it work. And,
right.
And it's what's really being called for now is a threefold formula of acceptance, accepting just the isness of what's happening, accepting all circumstances in my life, and then detachment. Being detached from all situations, all outcome, and many people confuse detachment with not caring, and they're completely unrelated. You can care more than breathing about something, but still be detached. You know, they're, you know, like a leaf in the wind. If you want to fight the wind, the wind's still going to carry you. You'll just be all battered and bruised and be miserable, and you'll miss enjoying the ride. So you just be detached. The wind has a purpose and a place and a destiny, and we get carried along in it. And then the final one of the threefold act is surrender. So it's acceptance, detachment, and surrender. And that will help people move through this massive catharsis that's happening on the planet. I mean, the human planet physically, the physical planet and the human race are both going through more change, let's say in a 50-year window, or even less than that, even in a 10-year window, than the planet's gone through in the last several million years.
Well, and it's increasing exponentially every year. You know, I wanted to quantify for just one moment, Louis, because a moment earlier you said something that's really quite paramount. You mentioned that the love vibration of the planet is changing, and listeners may hear that and go, oh, well, you know, well, what does that mean? I want to point out that this is also an actual quantifiable reality. I know that NASA has been measuring, you know, I think it's like the hertz, the level of the planet, the vibrational level of the planet, is and has been acceleratedly so for the past several years, raising in vibration. And higher vibrations support the elicitation of higher emotions and frequencies out of we humans. The environment, like when you walk into a room and you feel a certain way, that vibration collectively across the planet as being emanated by 6 billion humans is shifting and it's changing. And because of that, it's more difficult to continue with types of interactions that were able to be more dominant in lower vibrations.
Exactly.
Like control and fear and these kind of things require lower, more resonant, deeper vibrations. But now we're in a higher kind of a world, and so it's eliciting out of us, which is, I believe, a natural human tendency. I mean, it exists within each of us. So there's these external environment is changing to support this change, and because of that, people are being, for lack of a better term, forced, because the pot is changing, to experience more of themselves. And for many, it could be very uncomfortable, and therefore they'll, you know, adhere back to the, fall back into that fear and being controlled from outside factors. And others are struggling to reconnect with themselves, to remember the love of self, and that all that we speak of, all this notion of God or whatever that is, truly is inside of each and every one of us, and that we truly are all one, whatever that means to anyone. It is true, and it is one's own self self-definition and definement, and for one's to feel.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm so glad you shared that piece about measuring it, scientists measuring it in quantitative terms, because that does help a lot of people who get stuck in their heads and say, what does that mean? Oh, it's becoming love. Well, it is real. It's quantifiable and measurable. And I also loved when you spoke about saying that ways of being that were more dense or translated more fear-based before, but dense in how they appear and their vibration, they don't sustain. So, you know, it's becoming, in other words, it's becoming more and more difficult to live and sustain in this world by acting in non-accordance with love's tenets, or another,
right,
I call it God's will.
And to sustain it, you have to put more and more energy into it, and lower the caliber of it. And I think we're seeing that politically, not to go off on a political tangent, but we are seeing the use of those types of methods and tactics, and just fear and making up all kinds of things, because that's where we're at today, because we have so much information, we have so much access to real knowledge and truth. In order to sustain such illusion and negativity and fear, you have to just be so out there.
Yeah. And also how that change in rising in vibration will parlay into the world. You'll see that in businesses, institutions, in politics, in the arts, in many, many, in all realms, the shift in power, the shift in money, the shift in success will continue to gravitate more and more and more towards people who are living, breathing, acting, behaving in more loving ways, and people whose lives have been run by greed, competition, envy, jealousy, condescension, judgment, prejudice. Those people will more and more find themselves losing power and money, and or being invited / coerced into becoming more loving in order to sustain what they have. And there's nothing anyone can do to stop that. So it's, you know, again, the truth's not affected by our opinions or our wants or desires. This is just an isness.
Right.
It's a beautiful thing. It just happens so effortlessly.
Well, it's a natural human process. I mean, eventually all illusions, everything that's unsustainable will eventually end. It's not like it's a deep scientific, confused principle here. I mean, it's known. If you can't sustain it, it's going to ultimately end. And now we're seeing things going faster and faster and faster.
Except what is built in love, because only love is built.
Yes, yes.
Anything sourced from love, built from love, always sustains. That's a good thing, too.
Yeah. So how do we... I know there's so much we can go to from here, but I know that, that one of the things is that people just get caught, you know? Before they even know it, they're stuck in a rut, they're stuck in a pattern, they're stuck trying to escape, a hurtful world, I was looking at, one of your websites this morning, and there was somebody who had been to one of your talks, one of your events, was just mentioning about how he was trying to escape a hurtful world. And one of the ways to do that was to dream that the future, everything would be fine, right? Everything will just change, and then that'll make it okay for me. When in a real deeper truth is to learn to focus and become, clear on the present and realize the full acceptance of now so that we can shape anything we want.
And also, as Gandhi said, be the change.
Yes.
The change you want to see in others. Be the change you want to see in the world. It's, that whole waiting for Godot, principle is just one more victim consciousness. Now it just has a spiritual moniker on it. Put God's name on everything, but it's still being a victim, waiting for better days to come, waiting for 2012, waiting for the mothership, waiting for the fifth dimension. Anyone waiting for that is going to be waiting forever. You have to just, adopt a consciousness of it's all up to me. If there's anything you don't like about your life, you change it. If you don't like your circumstances, then change your focus and thoughts and desires. Of course, ultimately, the objective is to have no desires. The ultimate desire is to become desireless. And then where there is surrender and detachment, there's no pain, regardless of circumstance.
Mm-hmm.
All suffering is born of desire. It's the greatest, greatest cause of, and the single cause of pain and suffering in our lives.
Can you explain that a bit? I mean, we hear this phrase, life is suffering. What does that mean?
Suffering is human circumstance and experience which is born out of resistance to God's will, which is another way of saying trying to remain in control. The mission statement of the ego is, I want what I want, when I want it, how I want it, and don't anyone tell me otherwise. Don't let the door hit you in the behind on the way out. No one will tell me what to do. And the mission statement of the soul is, thy will be done, how may I serve you, Lord, thy will, not my will. Just surrender and detachment and subservience to that emanation from the divine that creates, guides, and sources all of creation. So wherever there's that control, which is all fear, I'll do it my way or the highway, that creates circumstances and conditions which bring pain and suffering.
Mm-hmm.
And so that control is tantamount to desire, people wanting what they want. And then you have to go underneath that. Why do people have such desires and such attachments to them? Because of weak faith. Because of the circumstances they've lived in their own lives with their parents, their siblings, their teachers, their lovers, their spouses, their employers, employees, and with what they've witnessed in the world on TV, in the news, in the media, in politics, and in history. There's become a deep, let's call it a stain on the collective consciousness and on the individual consciousness that God is either non-existing, a liar, a fraud, not there for me. And even if there is a taste of happiness, it's ephemeral. It'll definitely go because it always has and it always will. And so the faith gets weaker and weaker and weaker, and then therefore people think, well, if God's not there for me, it's, survival of the fittest, kill or be killed, look out for number one. And so that's what builds the desire. I've got to do it myself. If I want to get something, I've got to go get it myself. I'll make it myself. And therefore, the Creator is cut out of people's lives, and all they can know is suffering. People are so terrified of that space, that infinite pause between the inhalation and the exhalation when there's no breath. What'll I do? Or that feeling of stepping off the side of a cliff and saying there's nobody there to catch me. But that's where the magic lies. I'm speaking metaphorically about the cliff, by the way, for anyone who's listening. But metaphorically, that's in that space of not knowing, that's where God lives. That's where all the magic lives. That's where the miracles live. That's where the angels live. That's where all the manifestation happens, in that infinite and infinitesimal pause between the breath, that not knowing.
But we humans become wired for pain.
Yeah. Well, people become comfortable with what they know. And since most people only know suffering, they'll be the first to argue and say, oh, that's stupid. Who would say that? That's so ridiculous. But people actually love that. Most people are only happy when they're miserable. That is human nature. But what people fear is the unknown. And when the unknown is infinite bliss, infinite, you know, surrender, not having, you know, having to fight for you to fulfill your needs and to get what you want, to know that everything is given as needed, and that God has infinite supply, and there's an infinite amount of love. We don't have to demand it from our spouse or our partner or our lover. We don't have to demand it from our children, or you know, put controls and shackles on people so they'll give us what we want or treat us the way we want. And when you have that experience, and when I say God and self, I use interchangeably, because that all lives inside of us.
Mm-hmm.
When you find that sense of wholeness and completion and fulfillment inside of yourself, then you take it wherever you go, you share it with whomever you meet, and you experience it in whomever you meet, even if they're miserable. You know, like you and I could walk down, or maybe not you, but let's say hypothetically, I could walk down the street with any given person, and one person, we could both report what we see, and I could report seeing paradise, while someone else, and experiencing heaven, well, the other person might see a war-torn city street with bars on the first floor and broken glass in the street and,
right.
And you know, bagmen sleeping in the gutter, and I'll say, oh, my God, the street is so beautiful. And they're going to say, oh, you're on drugs, or you're just you know, poppycock. But no, it's when that love is inside of you, you see it in everything. And then when you see it in everything, you're experiencing it in everything, and then the next step is the everything becomes it. And that's,
right.
And that's what's happening in the world, as you described before, as a mass awakening. I mean, look how many people, how many businesses now are going green. And we've had two Democratic conventions now where the whole convention was green. I mean, that's unheard of.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the whole city of San Francisco get rid of plastic bags, and now L.A. just followed suit next year. I mean, these things are unheard of. Yeah, the planet is awakening.
And I just heard that yesterday there was an entire slow food exhibition here in San Francisco last weekend, very, very popular. No water, no plastic water bottles at all at the entire event.
That's phenomenal.
Yeah, yeah.
I just read that figure the other day. It's funny you bring up the plastic bottles. This is one that just, it really just, I almost throw up every time I see it. And I may get the figure wrong. I just saw it in a magazine the other day. I think it's 28 billion plastic water bottles in the U.S. alone, and 86% of them go to landfills. They don't even get recycled.
Unbelievable.
And they don't break down. Even when they say 1,000 years to break down, that's still a lie.
Right.
They don't decompose. They just break into smaller pieces,
mm-hmm.
which means they actually go inside of plants and inside of animals, which are now eating them, which means we actually eat the plastic bottles we're throwing in the dump.
Mm.
Eventually, we are eating them.
Right. You're listening to 89.5 FM, KPOO, San Francisco. This is Reality Sandwich, and my guest today is Louis-Dor Dempry. He is an enlightened spiritual master and embodying walking love and sharing a wonderful message with all of us here today on the show. And Louis, I'd like you to explain, I want to talk a little bit about this this notion of enlightenment. And because, you know, it's bantied about quite a bit today, I truly believe that there is such a state. I mean, I described it. We can talk about it. But then, you know, many look at this as going, oh, well, what does that mean? So how do we talk about it, and how do we explain to others kind of what this notion is? And we'll take it from there.
All right. That's a great topic, one of my faves. The funny thing is, it is a huge topic, and the funny thing is, everybody has a different opinion and idea about it, and even among enlightened beings, many of them will describe it all differently. And I myself describe it different ways to different people. I describe it in ways, I take different approaches to it so people can understand it and see it from different perspectives. But I liked when you used the quantitative analysis. I want to describe it quantitatively so people can see it, not as a lofty, poetic, you know, notion, but as something very practical, physical, and tangible. We live on a planet that has gravity, and that holds us on the planet, as we all know. That's a given. Well, remember I said how pretty much as a way of life, most humans live in fear. They have a fear-based reality, a fear-based relationship with their creator, a fear-based understanding of themselves and higher truth. So the gravity that holds people on the planet is fear. And that's what, because it's that gravity, it's what holds dominion in the consciousness. So while people, unenlightened people, their consciousness is more than 50% fear-based. So the gravity that sustains their lives on Earth is fear. And therefore, as I said, it overshadows all their experiences and perceptions of this paradisian world. Now, many unenlightened beings, as they begin their awakening process, and even beforehand, will have moments of bliss, of rapture, whether it's in the throes of passionate lovemaking, winning $1 million, getting a promotion, having an encounter with an angel or an ET, or just having your heart pierced by this ray of love, holding a baby or watching someone be born, whatever it is, being with someone when he or she draws her last breath, and you feel this love come into the room, which everyone will talk about and be afraid of at the same time. So people have these experiences where their heart opens, an enormous amount of love comes through, and some people will sustain that for hours, and I know many people who will sustain it for days, or receiving darshan or an anointing from a God-realized being, and this current goes into their body. They get divinely electrocuted, and some people will vibrate in bliss for a week. But eventually, the negativity will start creeping back in, the doubt, the skepticism, the fear, the pessimism, the downward spiral, and eventually, just like a pariah, like those little Pac-Men, will eat up all that bliss, and eventually people will be right back in the doldrums in fear again, even though they'll, you know, may still be putting on their best face and outfit and makeup and clothes and go to work and put on the big facade. Underneath is still that ache, that loneliness, that hollowness. Now, when one crosses the threshold of enlightenment, and this is what creates the crossing, when, as we keep purifying ourselves in all the many ways we do, consciously and unconsciously, purifying our thoughts, feelings, words, and deeds into ones that are more and more and more loving, becoming more accepting of our lives, of other people, less judgmental, more forgiving, more subservient and serving of others, more generous and kind and giving. As we become pure love in all those ways, our light quotient is rising, our fear is reducing, and at some point you cross the 50-yard line, and this quantum synaptic leap happens, even though you've only crossed from 49 to 50. But this huge thing happens, and now your entire reality is different. It's literally like walking through a stargate, because now, you know, it's like it's black and white. It's on planet, off planet. It's the Wizard of Oz. You know, she opens the door, and there's her world in living color. Even though you've only crossed that next micron, you've crossed into another dimension where now your embodiment is more than 50% love-based, and love is now what sustains you on the planet. And you now have, for all intents and purposes, the rose-colored lenses. You now see everything, most of the time, through the eyes of love. You experience the world through love. You experience people as loving. And you experience your circumstances through a loving filter and perspective and demeanor. Now, the converse is also true for enlightened people. Enlightened people still get angry. They still get sad. They still can get depressed. They still have things happen to them. They still have car crashes and get diseases and have people they love die around them, get fired from jobs. However, they might move into that momentarily, but now since they're sustained, their consciousness is sustained in a gravity in their embodiment called love, the love will, like in the former case, the fear pulled someone in, the love will pull someone right back into love, even with no effort on their part, because that's now the lion's share of your consciousness. Now, it doesn't mean you don't do anything. Of course, if you feel anger come up, you now have the tools and the ability to transmute it very quickly because you know the greater reality. You know that you're love. You're born of love, spawned from love, feed only on love, and you're in the world to only generate love. And so there's a tendency to just go in that direction. And even if you didn't, it would pull you there anyway because you've crossed that threshold. So unenlightened is sustained by fear. Enlightened are sustained by love more than 50% of the time. And then it keeps growing. Many people also falsely believe that once you attain enlightenment, you're just, you know, dancing in a poppy field, sipping green tea by the koi pond all day, and that's it. There are as many tiers of enlightenment, enlightened consciousness, as there are tiers of unenlightened consciousness. So once you've crossed that threshold, the need to continue purifying and becoming more Christ-like, more God-like, more loving, is paramount. It just keeps going. I mean, how much of God's love is enough? It's infinite. I always say the Godhead itself is always increasing, because if we're all particles of it and we're all increasing, then if you grab the whole collective cosmos together at any one moment, 1 second later, wouldn't it be a higher frequency?
Right.
We're all ascending into higher vibrations. So hand in hand with that, the caveat is that the single greatest disease in the world is complacency. As soon as people think, I'm there, I've arrived, oh, I'm enlightened, or I'm the bodhisattva here to heal the planet, you know, I'm the healer now, you've already, you know, pretty much, in some respects, cut the cord, the silver cord, and you're on a slow decline. That you never want that disease to come into your body of complacency. It's always that, oh my God, just being that, filled with a childlike sense of awe and wonderment is what sustains the innocence and that ache for the beloved of just wanting to be consumed and consumed by more and more love and to share it more. The more you share, the more you receive. It just keeps going and going and going.
And again, that's also a measurable vibrational phenomena. I mean, we've all had times where we're in really bad moods, and we notice the things that show up for us throughout our day, be it all the red lights,
yeah,
be it all, you know, spilling your coffee and attracting people throughout the day who are angry customers or mad at you or hearing stories that are really bummy, and other days where you're just, you know, absolutely awake in bliss, you know, and the whole day just goes perfectly, and you just wonder, my God, every light turned green in that beautiful girl in the coffee shop smiled at me and all these other things just happened and wow. And then at the end of the day, you forget that it was you who affected everything.
Yeah.
And it was funny. Your own vibration that affected everything.
Yeah, we set the tone.
And it's kind of like a really powerful positive phenomenon to realize the power and the grasp of one's own influence vibrationally over other things. And again, I think these were studies done by the HeartMath down in Boulder Creek or elsewhere, where, you know, one person's positive vibration, right, or love state can affect, you know, hundreds and hundreds around them.
Absolutely.
Your one way of being, your one feeling, whether you even open your mouth or say anything and go into a different modality of communication, I mean, we're not even talking about that, but just the state that you're in, the feeling you're having, what you're resonating, can affect hundreds and hundreds of people around you, and then it reverberates out from there, because then somebody else got a smile from you, and who knows how that affects their day. And it's a really powerful thing, and I think a fearful thing also, for us to explore that notion of our own personal influence, our wills. What is that? You know, so it's another question that I feel guilty about, right? I mean, this whole notion that we are so at influence over what we affect in our own lives.
Well, it's the exact opposite. We're the ones wielding all the power. And the grand irony of that beautiful story you shared is that the people who are having the miserable day with all the red lights and the angry teller at the bank and the angry cashier and the getting hit by a car and all those things, the irony is people who are having that experience usually go deeper and deeper and deeper into it, because it increases their victim consciousness and they fortify it. They keep feeding the beast rather than realizing, as you said at the end of that little treatise, that wow, I'm the one creating all this. That means if my negativity created all these horrible things happening, I can just step out of it right now and say, you know what? I'm just going to, just like an old garment, I'm going to take this garment off and I'm going to put on a kind and loving one and watch my day change instantly. And, you know, and I can look at, you know, students I have around me, ones who will do that and ones who won't, who'll just ride the same train, so to speak, and just take it until they finally just have a tragedy, or they just collapse from sheer exhaustion, or finally their heart just breaks open and they just start to weep, or someone punches them in the face, or they get fired, which is a tragedy. Eventually, tragedy stops them, or that they awaken. And then there are other people who have a somewhat of a grasp on higher truth, and they just need someone to give them a nudge and say, wait a minute, you're the one doing this. And then they have that V8 moment where they slap their forehead and go, oh, you're right. I was angry when I woke up this morning. And look at all the things that I made happen. I'm going to stop right now. I'm going to write down all my anger on a piece of paper, burn it, say, here, I surrender it. Now I choose love, and boom, it changes on a dime. We do have that level of power. They've done laboratory tests where they had people yell at a rat and it dropped dead, you know, just by getting yelled at. And in the Bible, there's a story of Jesus yelling at a fig tree in front of his disciples, and it killed it instantly. You know, just to show them, show his people the power of the spoken word. You know, everything we do, this is the higher meaning of free will. Free will doesn't mean take the money and run. You know, thanks for the Winnebago, God, I'll call you when I need you, which is how people use it. But it's the permission to use the full power of God any way we want, anytime we want. But that comes with an enormous responsibility. You know, because everything we say, think, do, and feel wields the full power of the Creator. So if people would wake up to that, they'd be far more discerning with how they use their words and their thoughts and their feelings and their deeds. Because that cosmic power goes through us and is made manifest. And then we bear the karma or consequence of that. We sow loving seeds, we harvest loving fruits. We sow bitter seeds, we harvest bitter fruits. And God can't stop that. No master can stop that. That's what we do. We're responsible.
You know, in today's world, so many people are in pain. And how are you helping the world to heal itself?
Well, by being an example, you know, there are many painful things that have happened in my life, and by modeling the example of saying, love all, accept all, forgive all, love thyself no matter what, people watch and they witness and say, well, if you can do that, then I can do that. And then also teaching other people to be that for others too, to be accepting and forgiving of yourself and of others, and to recognize, I think one of the most empowering things I could share with people is, on some level, people would recognize that everything at the level of the absolute is God's will playing out. I know this is I sometimes hesitate to get on this subject because it can be so misinterpreted, because victim consciousness then takes it and says, oh, then I don't have to do anything. So we can all go out and rob stores then, or I could, you know, cheat on my spouse, and I can go kill animals, and I can, you know, abuse children and cheat on exams because it's all God's will. Well, no. Yes and no. It's really a parallel reality. Everything is playing out as in a divine tapestry that's all been preordained and predestined. But simultaneous with that and commensurate with that is our invitation and our destiny and primordial created essence to be love at all times, and to constantly purify ourselves and make the most loving choices in every moment. And when we don't, to A, admit it, B, apologize, C, make restitution, and D, recommit to a higher, more loving way of being. Now, if both of those have to coexist, it doesn't mean just do whatever you want because it's all perfect and it's all God's will. That's still victim consciousness. That's just as bad as, woe is me, look at how everybody else is lucky, and I was dealt the short end of the stick in life. That's victim consciousness too. They're both victim consciousness.
If I hear you correctly, it's like you're saying in that statement, oh, someone would say, oh, it's all God's will, so I don't have to have any input here. It's not like God's somebody else.
Exactly.
You know, it's not like you can just let it fly and oh, it's God's will, not mine. It's out of my hands. The thing is, it really is in your hands. Is that kind of what we're saying here?
It's all us.
Yeah.
It's all up to us. And, you know, and the last and greatest gift of creation is free will. That, you know, we were given the opportunity to use this creative power however we choose. And then one of the great gifts is that we get to reap the benefit, and I underscore the word benefit when I'm including suffering as a benefit. We reap the benefit of how we use it. How we use that free will, and that's an awesome thing. And that's one of the reasons that suffering exists, because all suffering is born of resistance to the divine, resistance to love. And so when, wherever there is surrender, there isn't pain, you know, in spite of all circumstance. So people say, well, if there's a God, why would God allow suffering? I said, well, because it wears down resistance. That's the beauty of it, and that's why God allows it. Because eventually, it wears people out, and they just give up. That same state you see the elderly in when they're on their deathbed, you know, or not just elderly, but anyone in those, for some it's seconds, for some it's minutes, for some it's hours, and some attain that state of peace weeks before they go. But for most people, it's in the last minutes and hours. This amazing bliss and peace comes into the room. I don't know if you've ever been with someone as he or she drew his last breath, but most always, in fact, I can't think of a case where it hasn't happened, even if it's only for 1 second, this peace comes in as they get a flash of the ultimate reality, that there is only love, and everything else was an illusion and is an illusion. Well, why wait till you're drawing your last breath to have that? You can have that now.
Mm-hmm.
We can have that now and then live in that state of peace for the rest of our lives and enjoy the world. Why fight it? You know, it's like the river knows how to deliver the droplet from the mountaintop to the sea. It's not our job to tell the river where to turn and how to take us.
Mm-hmm.
The river knows how to deliver water molecules to the sea. That's what it does. And it doesn't think about it, and it doesn't have board meetings, and it doesn't contemplate it. It just is an isness. We're the droplet, and the divine is the river, and the sea is the oneness. And we're on a journey of merging and returning into that oneness. We're just saying, wow, I am everything. I liked when you commented, too, about the oneness, too. A lot of people think that's a poetic thing, and oh, what do you mean we're all one? You know, you can measure that quantitatively. I had cousins who were identical twins, and this is known in identical twins worldwide, that if twins are separated, identical twins that came from the same egg, they're separated, let's say, by thousands of miles, even continents. If one of them gets violently ill, the other one feels it. Almost 100% of the time measured over all time in history. If one dies, the other feels it. If one is depressed, if one has a great windfall, how do you explain that? Well, they're from the same egg, they share the same cells, but they're two separate people. That's a tiny, tiny example of how we're all one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I also share that in talking, you know, a big part of our ministry here is with the green movement and the eco movement, organic living and holistic living. And, you know, one of the concepts I share with people is, in terms of the oneness, people who throw trash or litter, you know, if you throw, let's say, a cigarette butt in the street, somewhere else in the world, you know, an oil spill just happened, and you actually created it by throwing the cigarette butt. When you give up your lunch and feed someone who's in need, CARE or one of those other big companies, UNICEF, just got a $1 million donation and brought 2 tons of grain into South Africa because you gave up your lunch to feed someone in need.
Right.
That's how it works. And again, people say, oh, that's so ridiculous, how poetic, how cute for you. The truth is not affected by people's opinions.
Right. And I think we're learning, you know, we're getting so much, you know, intelligent consciousness today of the all these interconnected facets of the world and how, and really how much, you know, the world itself is maturing as one collective organism. You know, you do something here, you know its impact across the planet. So all these things that were, you know, spiritual or woo-woo were all kind of merging together with our concrete understandings of reality, regardless of how we even, you know, perceive that. It just is, and everything's coming together kind of as one. And there is no longer the sustainability to live in illusion. Or even to live in fear, despite how we may perceive our current world today, despite how many people in our world today are remembering fear, specifically on this date, you know, it doesn't really matter because the evolution of life itself, which is an inevitably unfolding process of openness, is happening around us. We have to look for it, we have to see it, and we have to find it within ourselves every single day and every single moment. I mean, this is what I really feel when we learn about, you know, the power of now. What is this? What does it mean to be present? You know, we're speaking about learning, relearning to allow ourselves to fall into a place of love and openness 50.00% of the time plus, so that we can be that beacon of love and sharing and attraction for others. And I think it's this power of social facilitation, and one person at a time, and then really powerful, wonderful people doing incredible work like yourself and spreading it out. These things are having an impact. They're affecting the world, and I truly feel that that this is, you know, massively significant in the unfolding that we're all co-creating from this day forward and every day in our collective life. And therefore, that's why we always end this show with, you know, remember, the all change begins with you, because the power is within each and one, every one of us. And that's why we spend an hour every week having a sandwich about reality, so that we can take it in a palatable way and remember these things, and to step out of being caught by the victim mentality that the world is thrusting at us, or the fear that the world is thrusting at us. And if we have to get angry at it and turn around and give them the finger, then so be it. If that's what it takes to fall back into your own power, into your own love, and really your broader understanding and acknowledgement and acceptance, then, hey, that's a step.
Yeah, when you just said that, if we have to give someone the finger, then so be it, you reminded me of a funny little Leela that one day this one of my disciples had come to my house, and he opened the door, and he was in the most angry, miserable state. Imagine, he was just nasty as the day could be. And he came in, and I could only tolerate him for a few minutes, and I kept inviting him. I said, you know, you really could just step out of that and be kind and loving. And he just did not want to budge. And so I turned to him, and I said, you know what? I've given you 5-10 minutes now to step into a loving space, and you just want to stay mean and nasty and miserable. So I love you enough to let you, but I can't have you here polluting my space, so I do need to ask you to leave my house. Because he was cussing and swearing and yelling and just bad-mouthing everything and everyone. I said, so I need to ask you to leave, because my house is a temple, and I don't live in that. That's not my reality, so I'm not going to sit here and let you pollute my living room and my brain cells. So, but what I do want you to do, I have a gift for you as you're leaving. And I said it very sweetly. I said, you need to go now, and I wish you well, but I have a gift for you. And he looked at me. His eyes got all bright and bushy, and he said, oh, what? And I said, I want you to go out today and be the meanest, cruelest, most miserable human being who ever walked the face of the earth. And he looked at me. His jaw fell open, and he said, huh? He said, I can't believe you, my guru, just said that. I can't believe that someone who's pure love would tell me to go out and be that. Why would you say something like that? I said, why? Because you will suffer 100 times more, and you'll move through it more quickly. You'll get to a loving space more quicker when you wear yourself out from your own disgust and contempt.
And then sometimes we need that.
And I said, and then the world will be better off, because the world will have to endure maybe only 4 hours of your nastiness instead of 12.
Well, here's to less pain and more love.
But why even go that route? Why not just be kind and
right.
Nice? Have no suffering.
Right. Louis, thank you for joining me.
Thank you so much, Martin. It's been great sharing with you and talking with you. And
we'll connect again in a couple of months. I know you have a DVD and some new websites coming out, so we'll talk again in a couple of months. Thank you so much.
Great. Thank you.
You've been listening to Reality Sandwich here on 89.5 KPOO San Francisco. My name is Martin Matthews. I'm a certified clinical and medical hypnotherapist with Healthful Living. You can get this show and all past shows at realitysandwichradio.com. Today we've been speaking with enlightened spiritual master Louis Dore Dempry. Thanks for listening.